from deep inside your radio.
From the Le Show Dome, ladies and gentlemen, back where it belongs, sometimes. If it seems Canadians weigh less than their American neighbors, opens an article in New Scientist, they do. But not for the reasons you might think. This is New Scientist's writing. It's kind of almost Canadian, don't you think, ye? A large swath of Canada actually has lower gravity than its surroundings.
Oh, it's lower gravity.
Researchers have puzzled for years over whether this was due to the crust there rebounding slowly after the end of the last ice age, or a deeper issue involving convection in the Earth's mantle, eh? Or some combination of the two. Now, precise, ultra-precise measurements taken over 4 years by a pair of satellites known as GRACE. Guys in the space business just spend way too much time making up the acronymic names for these projects. Just like the guys in TV spend way too much time thinking up the titles of episodes of TV comedy shows. Titles that only they're going to see. It's just my opinion. Ultra-precise measurements, I say, reveal that each effect is equally responsible for Canada's low gravity. Low gravity is the reason for Canada. Well, it just helps. It helps to explain a lot, or it explains nothing at all. Those are the two possibilities. Ladies and gentlemen, last week, this program, I don't know if any others, pointed out that the U.S. food inspectors who'd gone over to Canada, gone over to China to look at the plants where the melamine-laced wheat gluten that tainted pet food and possibly people food in this country originated. When they got there, they found out that they couldn't get into the plants because the Chinese had told them it was a national holiday all week. Well, some people apparently were busy on the national holiday. Dateline Washington, U.S. investigators found shuttered factories when they finally arrived at the Chinese food processors involved. Quote, we visited the two facilities and there is essentially nothing to be found because they're closed down, says Walter Batts, head of the FDA's Office of International Investigations. Nothing is available to be seen at the facilities. They were closed down, machinery dismantled, said Batts. FDA said it received extensive cooperation from Chinese General Administration of Quality Supervision. Well, that's good cooperation, that is. This story from Reuters just neglects to mention the week-long vacation that might explain what they did on their vacation. That tainted Chinese ingredient was seriously contaminated wheat flour, government investigators now say. This adds a new layer of fraud to an already seamy tale of international deception, according to the Washington Post. And officials say some of that contaminated flour mislabeled as gluten was mixed into fish food in Canada and exported. Canada, is at the low gravity here, exported to the United States where it was fed to fish raised for human consumption. Accordingly, some American fish may be laced with melamine. It shows the degree to which, with the globalization of agriculture, things that go wrong in one country can affect many of us who never thought we'd be touched, says a biologist with an advocacy group. Eat local, ladies and gentlemen. Eat local. And cannabis smokers, marijuana smokers to you and me, this from the Sunday Observer in London, are unwittingly funding Islamic extremists linked to terror attacks in Spain, Morocco, and Algeria, according to a joint investigation by the Spanish and French Secret Services. Remember that PSA that the Partnership for a Drug-Free America used to run that alleged that if you used illegal drugs, you were helping to fund terrorists? Here's that accusation again. This will be seized on by both campaigners for a harsher clampdown on marijuana and by those who argue that legalization is the only way to end a petty dealing trend that is dragging growing numbers of teenagers into crime. The investigation was launched by the Spanish and French intelligence agency after Spanish police found that the Islamists behind the Madrid bombings in 2004 bought their explosives from former miners in return for blocks of hashish. Hashish! Which, as we all remember, the word comes from the word for assassin. So, yes. Once again, buy local. Hello, welcome to the show. From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show, and now, the Apologies of the Week.
We're so sorry.
Wow. Look at all these apologies. It's a sorry week. Belgian Prime Minister Guy Verhofstadt has apologized for his country's deportation of Jews to Nazi death camps during World War II. Never too late, department. Quote, only by recognizing the responsibility of the authorities of the time can we build a future where this will never happen again, he said. I say, Want to bet? The government has just released Submissive Belgium, a report that shows how high-ranking Belgian officials and municipalities collaborated with the Nazis in the deportation of the Jews. Submissive Belgium. Sounds hot. Bosses of an Australian TV awards show apologized to Steve Irwin's widow, Terry, after making her cry at a award ceremony. Terry became emotional at last Sunday's Australian Logie Awards. As those are Australia's Emmys. They're the Logies. You might want to check the gravity down there. When footage from an interview with her, filmed shortly after the death of her husband, was aired. Irwin's family friend says it was awful. Truly, they couldn't have picked a worse clip. She was devastated when that clip was shown. And the fact that they were cutting to her. She didn't know where to look or what to do. It was the first view she'd had of the clip. Representatives of the network apologized to the mother of two, saying, "The Logies producers are sorry if anything that took place upset her." And the sorry producers are Logie. Red Sox pitcher Curt Schilling backed off on his criticism directed towards Barry Bonds during a guest appearance on a Boston radio show earlier this week. First of our baseball apologies. Must be baseball season. Schilling authored a blog entry on Wednesday entitled Public Apology on his website. Quote, "Everyone has days and events in life that love to push the rewind button on. Yesterday was one of those days," Schilling wrote. "Regardless of my opinions, thoughts, and beliefs on anything Barry Bonds, it was absolutely irresponsible and wrong to say what I did. I don't think it's within anyone's right to say the things I said yesterday and affect other people's lives in that way." What did he say? Schilling said Tuesday morning on WEEI Radio that Bonds is among the bad players in the game and he isn't worthy of surpassing Hank Aaron's all-time home run record. On Tuesday, Schilling said, "I mean, he admitted he used steroids. I mean, there's no gray area. He admitted to cheating on his wife, cheating on his taxes, and cheating on the game." But Schilling just now apologized. Schilling apologized to anyone who may have been offended by the comments that I made. A Santa Cruz city councilman apologized for lewd comments police said he made during a late-night ride-along. Tony Madrigal apparently pointed to a bar patron and made what the city manager called inappropriate comments after bar hours. City manager called Madrigal's comment inappropriate and said it violated city's sexual harassment policy. XM satellite radio shock jocks Opie and Anthony apologized Friday for airing a homeless man's crude comments that he'd like to have sex with Condoleezza Rice, Laura Bush, and Queen Elizabeth. Who wouldn't? The remarks were made on their show Wednesday by a guest the duo called Homeless Charlie. As the name of each woman came up, the guest said he would like to have sex with her using language not fit to print. Opie and Anthony laughed as they imagined Rice's horror while describing being punched in the face by Homeless Charlie. XM said they deplore the comments. Opie and Anthony apologized to listeners. Quote, "We apologize to the public officials for comments that we made on our XM show. We take very seriously the responsibility that comes with our creative freedom and regret any offense that this segment has caused." Unquote. Them. Or maybe their lawyer. New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg has apologized to a group of British tourists who were frog-marched off a sightseeing bus and forced to kneel. On the pavement with their hands behind their heads. The double-decker bus was evacuated and swarmed with armed police when a bus worker became suspicious of the group of Britons. The five men were handcuffed behind their backs before shocked onlookers near Times Square. "It turned out these people did not present any threat whatsoever," Mayor Bloomberg said. "It's a shame, and I certainly apologize on behalf of the city of New York. We love tourists. And we want them to keep coming here and feel that they can go around and enjoy the city." What's the rest of the story? The five Britons are all members of the Sikh religion and grew up together in Birmingham, England. They left the city after the incident on Sunday to continue their U.S. trip. One said it had not spoiled their visit. "These things happen, don't they?" he told the New York Daily News. "We have no hard feelings. I'm definitely coming back to New York." All right, then. We'll be ready for you. New Yorkers have been urged to report anything suspicious to police, but the mayor sounded a note of caution, warning them to use common sense and avoid pigeonholing people like the group of South Asian-looking Britons. Billboard in Baltimore of Rush Limbaugh was defaced this week, and a spokesman for the city agency responsible for cleaning up graffiti said he liked it that way. "It looks great," said Robert Murrow of Baltimore's Department of Public Works. "It did my heart good." The chief spokesman for Baltimore's Department of Public Works and Murrow's supervisor called the remarks outrageous and said Murrow had deeply apologized. An army commander of the United States Army has apologized and paid compensation this week to families of Afghan civilians killed by Marines after a suicide attack in March, marking the first formal acknowledgement by American authorities that the killings were unjustified. Colonel John Nicholson, an Army Brigade commander in eastern Afghanistan, met this week with the families of the 10 Afghans killed and 50 wounded when a Marine Special Ops unit opened fire along a crowded stretch of road near Jalalabad. Tom, can you help me with that?
Jalalabad?
Mm-hmm. After a suicide bomber in a vehicle rammed their convoy. Quote, "I stand before you today deeply, deeply ashamed and terribly sorry that Americans have killed and wounded innocent Afghan people," Colonel Nicholson said, recounting to reporters the words he used in the meetings. He said, "We made official apologies on the part of the U.S. government and paid $2,000 for each death." Life is cheap in Afghanistan, apparently. I'd want three for mine. The incident is already the subject of a criminal investigation by the Pentagon. The decision to issue a public apology reflects the military's growing concern that a spate of recent civilian casualties have led to widespread ill will among Afghans and could jeopardize military operations. So why screw up one war when you can screw up two? Oh, sorry. These are the apologies of the week. HBO chairman and CEO Chris Albrecht took a leave of absence this week in order to seek counseling from Alcoholics Anonymous. The executive said in a memo to co-workers, Albrecht's action was in response to his arrest on charges he committed a domestic assault on a woman identified as his girlfriend outside the MGM Grand in Vegas after an HBO-televised boxing match. Boxing can do that to people. Quote, "This weekend was a wake-up call to me of a weakness I thought I'd overcome long ago. 2 years ago, I decided I could handle drinking again. Clearly, I was wrong. Given that truth, I have committed myself to sobriety," Albrecht wrote in the memo. He apologized for the embarrassment caused to his family and, quote, "the company I love," unquote. Later in the week, the company he loved fired him. That's love, baby. That's show business love, baby. Dateline Newark, Delaware, and University of Delaware sophomore Lauren Borowski says she wasn't thinking when she and others dressed as Latino gardeners and gangsters for a South of the Border party that ended up offending a campus Latino group. Borowski apologized at a forum on race at the university's George Reed Hall. Dateline Boston prosecutors said they would not pursue charges against two men who planted electronic devices around the city as part of a botched advertising campaign after the pair apologized this week for causing a bomb scare. In contrast to their first court appearance in January when they mugged for the camera and waved to friends in the courtroom, the men this week offered contrite apologies and said they never expected the stunt to cause any turmoil. Peter Berdofsky said, quote, there's a lot of deeplies this week. This is a week for deep apologies. Those shallow apologies are a thing of the past. I deeply regret that the incident caused such anguish and disruption to so many people, Berdofsky said. His partner said, I had no intention of upsetting or alarming anyone. A journalist at the BBC's flagship current affairs television series, Panorama, has been reprimanded for losing his temper and screaming with rage during the making of an investigation into the Church of Scientology. John Sweeney has apologized for the outburst against the Scientologist, which was filmed and then put on the YouTube website, prompting criticism of the BBC. The BBC had an internal inquiry but said Sweeney had not breached any guidelines. The incident is one of the first examples of video ambushing where organizations being investigated turn the cameras on the investigators. The Church of Scientology shadowed the Panorama team in America with its own camera crew. It has made a counter-documentary and distributed 100,000 DVDs to members of parliament, religious groups, media organizations, and business leaders. How'd they get the money to do that? Oh. Panorama has responded by posting a YouTube clip of its own in which leading Scientologist Tom Davis, a friend of Tom Cruise, is seen losing his temper at Sweeney's use of the words sinister cult. An apology comes this week from Akon, a Senegalese-American R&B singer whose conduct in an amateur video circulating online led Verizon to cease advertisements involving him. Sending a chill through the touring business, since Verizon has also ceased its sponsorship of the pop star Gwen Stefani's tour, for which Akon is the opening act. Quote, I want to sincerely apologize for the embarrassment and any pain I've caused to the young woman. This is a young woman, I guess. His conduct in an amateur video. I don't even know. I want to sincerely apologize for the embarrassment and any pain I've caused to the young woman who joined me on stage. Oh, I see. His stage show has involved some hijinks, apparently, or lowjinks. Her family and the Trinidad community for the events at my concert, Akon said in a statement. And you know, from little Akons, great orcs grow. Dateline Butler County, Ohio. A coroner's office employee is serving a 5-day paid suspension in connection with the mix-up of two bodies. The suspension comes after the wrong body was released to a family and buried. The mix-up took place because a body bag was never opened to make a positive identification. County Coroner Richard Burkhardt apologized publicly to the families. Yuck. Tommy Thompson, former governor of Wisconsin and a presidential candidate on the Republican side, cited a dead hearing aid and an urgent need to use the bathroom in explaining this week why he said at a GOP presidential debate that an employer should be allowed to fire a gay worker. This is his second apology for that same quote, but now he blames a hearing aid and having to go wee. Hey, those are good reasons. A Santa Cruz city councilman apologized. No, we have that. After a comment that presidential candidate Mitt Romney called an assault on his belief in God, the Reverend Al Sharpton has apologized to Mormon church leaders and members. In a debate on Monday, Sharpton said, quote, those of us who believe in God will defeat Romney in the presidential race. On Wednesday, Romney said Sharpton's comment could be construed as bigoted. During an interview with Glenn Beck on CNN Headline News this week, Sharpton apologized to Mormons. If my words could have been construed in any way that would hurt a regular Mormon. I apologize to them, Sharpton said. And our final baseball apology of the week. With no outs in the top of the third inning Saturday, Orioles pitcher Daniel Cabrera gave up a leadoff double. The Indians' Grady Sizemore strolled to the plate. For the players on the field and the fans in attendance, it was all very routine. Those watching the game on television, though, were about to hear something that had no place in a ball game. Coming out of broadcaster Rick Dempsey's mouth. In a Mid-Atlantic Sports Network booth, Dempsey and Gary Thorne were interviewing Laura Giuliani, the wife of Oriole Jay Gibbons, who was promoting a fundraiser the next day at the ballpark intended to help fight domestic violence. Laura, will this kind of help Jay in the domestic violence area? If he doesn't start getting a few more hits, you might grab him around the neck and rough him up a little bit. Is the money going to go help him a little bit with maybe some of the hospital bills or something like that? I don't know, Rick. I don't think I'm encouraging that. Not going there? Nope, not going there. All right, I'll domestically violate him if he doesn't start getting some more hits. There was no canned laugh track, but some uncomfortable chuckles made it clear Dempsey felt he was cracking a joke. In a subsequent interview, Dempsey apologized and said he felt the humor was directed at Gibbons' batting slump, not the noble cause Giuliani was supporting. I certainly didn't mean to offend anyone with my comments, said Dempsey, the former Oriole player and coach. This was the first time he did commentary from the stadium. I was just trying to bring some levity to the fact Jay hasn't been hitting as well as he wanted to. It's a serious issue. I didn't mean to make a joke about that at all. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. What are the inspectors general up to? Veterans returning from Iraq and Afghanistan are at increased risk of suicide because not all Veterans Administration health clinics have 24-hour mental care available, says the review released this week by the department's inspector general. It found that nearly 3 years into the VA's broad strategy for mental health care, services are inconsistent. Several facilities lack 24-hour staff, adequate screening for mental problems, or properly trained workers. We need those? One-third of veterans report symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. The VA's acting undersecretary for health agreed with many of the recommendations. The troops and veterans say they are suffering more psychological problems due to repeated and extended deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan. In a study this month, a Pentagon task force issued an urgent warning for improved care. We'll get right on that. News of the godly. We haven't had this for a while, ladies and gentlemen. The godly are up to interesting things. Christian leaders are demanding that the pastor of a massive U.S. evangelical church discipline a prominent parishioner for involvement in the pornography industry. Stay tuned for some interesting names on this. Pastor Rick Warren is the charismatic leader of one of the largest evangelical congregations in the U.S., the California Saddleback Church. Among the 20,000 members of the dynamic church congregation is Rupert Murdoch. A report by a business publication in 2006 revealed that News Corp's European subsidiary, British Sky Broadcasting, has been creating its own suite of hardcore pornography channels on British satellite television. Rupert Murdoch is the largest stockholder in British Sky Television. Chris Roseborough, with the Christian Accountability Network, has challenged Pastor Warren to discipline Murdoch for his involvement with the porn industry. Quote, Roseborough, as a Christian, Murdoch is committing an egregious sin by owning and expanding and profiting from pornographic channels, and Rick Warren, as his pastor, has a biblical duty to call Murdoch to repentance and or put him out of the church. Unquote. I'll see what I can do. And a $10 million ad campaign for chemistry.com, a matchmaking website, asks why a competing site rejects certain groups of singles, including gay men and lesbian. The ads include an eyebrow-raising TV spot that has rejected by eHarmony over footage of a gay man. eHarmony.com uses personality profile indexes for matchmaking. Singles looking for matches through eHarmony must first complete a 430-question survey, which extrapolates their compatibility in areas like emotional temperament, values and beliefs, and key experiences. The eHarmony survey was created by the site's founder, Dr. Neil Clark Warren, a psychologist who has written numerous self-help books, including three published by Focus on the Family, an anti-gay religious and political group headed by Dr. James Dobson. When Warren launched eHarmony way back in 2000, his primary marketing tool was the daily radio broadcasts of Focus on the Family. News of the godly, ladies and gentlemen. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast.
Operator, up in heaven, won't you please do something special just for me? 'Cause I've been wanting for a long, long time to holler up at a partner of mine. See, I already got the number, I just need the new area code. 'Cause 949-0344. Every time I dial it up, it don't wanna wait no more. Operator.
bicycle chemistry too far. He's getting down in the bar with Johnny Guitar. Operator, oh, operator. Well, now, operator.
This is Le Show. How's the war on drugs going? Billions of dollars in aid to Colombia have failed to drive up the price of cocaine on American streets. That's according to the head of the top U.S. anti-drug agency. Well, he should know. He's out buying. Officials in Washington have said crop spraying and military pressure on drug-smuggling guerrillas and paramilitaries would make cocaine more expensive in the United States. But the DEA chief says a higher price, a key indicator of success in the war on drugs, had failed to actually be higher for very long. That's what the war on drugs is trying to do, is, I guess, make it harder for poor people to buy drugs. Because, you know, if you've got enough money, what the hell? The tough challenge for us is to raise that price and keep it at that higher level, says DEA Director Karen Tandy. Who knew? President Bush is preparing to ask Congress for $3.9 billion more aid for Colombia. Why don't they just do like they do with agricultural crops and just buy it? Use the $3.9 billion to buy the cocaine. Take it off the market like they do with surplus wheat. Have it stored in big silos. And imagine the silo parties you could have. All right, just a bright idea from your friends here at the good hands people. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, what's going on with our good friend Pakistan? You know, they are our ally in the whatever war we're involved in these days. War on drugs, war on terror, war on whatever. A Pakistani public information campaign about what to do if you stumble across stray radioactive material is raising hairs on the necks of Western arms control experts, according to Nature magazine. The ads appeared last week in several Urdu language newspapers, which may explain why you haven't seen them. They featured the large yellow radiation symbol and a warning to report any lost or misplaced isotopes. Wait a minute. Let me check my... I got keys. No isotopes. No topes. Quote, as public information campaigns go, it's unique, unquote. Jeffrey Lewis, director of nuclear strategy and nonproliferation at the New America Foundation in Washington. Lewis says he's shocked to hear of the announcements. I'm sort of titillated myself. Pakistan has never lost nuclear material per se. I like that. But it has a poor track record of protecting its nuclear technology. We all know about A.Q. Khan, the father of Pakistan's nuclear program, who sold nuclear weapons, materials, and techniques to apparently all comers. Pakistan's Nuclear Regulatory Authority played down the significance of the ads. Quote, no radioactive source has been stolen, lost, or missed, says spokesman Zahir Ayub Baig. Baig says the newspaper ads were simply meant to warn citizens about old medical and industrial sources that may have been lost before the founding of the nation a half century ago. Lost radioactive materials can pose a risk to public health. In 1987, an abandoned canister of cesium-137 found in a Brazilian scrapyard led to the contamination of over 244 people. In March, a container of yellow cake uranium turned up in a Los Angeles area pawn shop. Hey, better call Saddam and tell... Yellow cake is not considered dangerous, but the store owner nevertheless called authorities. In Pakistan, doesn't inspire confidence placing the ad, says Lewis. It's having to do it in the first place that's suspicious, he says. Yeah, but they're our friends. And several Christian families have fled their homes in northwestern Pakistan after their minority community received threatening letters to shut churches and convert to Islam, according to a rights activist. The unsigned letters were distributed in the town of Charsada, where Pakistan's interior minister last month escaped a suicide attack. So that's a town you want to go to. Shahbaz Bhatti, head of the All Pakistan Minorities Alliance, claims militants trying to impose Taliban-style social strictures were responsible for the letters, which gave Christians until May 17th to convert. Several families, among 500 or so Christians in the town, had already migrated. Others were contemplating the same. Our friends in Pakistan, ladies and gentlemen. The U.S. military, shifting the focus just slightly to Iraq, just a little bit over the line there. The U.S. military commander in northern Iraq says he doesn't have enough troops to quell the increasing violence there. I thought they were listening to the general on the Major General Benjamin Mixon, not Nixon, Mixon, says the Sunni insurgency is worsening in Diyala province because militants are intensifying their attacks there to avoid the security crackdown in Baghdad. Well, nobody could have predicted that. Nobody could have predicted that if you crack down in Baghdad, the militants are going to move elsewhere. I mean, that's just, who would have thought, who could have possibly? Major General Mixon accused the Iraqi government of moving too slowly to provide what he calls the most powerful weapon against the insurgents, a functioning government. Progress is being in selective areas all too slow, and at times we have episodic setbacks and unnecessary roadblocks to security and governance. But we continue to move forward, he says, because you have to end on an up note. I think it's the law. It's not just the Christians in Pakistan. Iraq's Christian community, according to the British newspaper The Telegraph, is close to extinction. Thousands are being forced to flee their traditional strongholds in Baghdad. Well, I thought that was where the safe... Iraq's Christian community is close to extinction. That's what it said. Iraqi Islamic extremists have increasingly targeted Iraqi Christians, demanding they convert. An exodus is underway in the southern district of Dora. Hi, Dora. After groups affiliated to al-Qaeda issued a threat of convert or be killed. Most have fled to Kurdish northern Iraq, where the village of Ankawa has grown into an overcrowded city of Christ. Well, there's a leave for Syria or Jordan. Priests claim that half Baghdad's pre-2003 Christian population has fled or been killed. They also claim the Iraqi government is failing to protect them. Well, yeah, that would assume you have an Iraqi government. All right, so we know that Vice President Cheney went to Iraq this week. The Speaker of the Parliament this week rejected his criticism of the legislature's plans to take a two-month summer vacation, saying it amounted to unacceptable interference in Iraqi affairs. He said those behind the criticism of Iraq's parliament would make better use of their time trying to counter Nancy Pelosi's criticism of the war, said Speaker Mahmoud al-Mashadani. You'd better try and control Nancy Pelosi rather than Mahmoud al-Mashadani. There was some activity here when Cheney was in Iraq. There were memos to the news networks asking them to stop mentioning where Dick Cheney was while he was in Iraq, because it's so safe there. The vice president's office is strongly requesting that we no longer report that the vice president is at, and this is redacted, in Baghdad. They realize his location has already been reported, but are asking nonetheless that we discontinue reporting the exact location, said one internal news department memo. Cheney met with Prime Minister Maliki this week in Baghdad and then went to Saudi Arabia to meet with King Abdullah. King Abdullah has refused to meet with Prime Minister Maliki when Maliki went on a trip around the Middle East earlier this year. And Cheney then went on an American aircraft carrier to warn Iran to be nice. Or to be good. Or to be like we want them to be. The aircraft carrier was just 240 kilometers off Iran's coast. You metric people know how close that is. The speech that Cheney gave threatening Iran, according to the New York Times, was not circulated broadly in the government before it was delivered, according to a senior American diplomat. The official said, quote, of Cheney, quote, he kind of runs by his own rules, unquote.
Next, intimate tales of America's first underground vice president, the action-packed diary of the man who's just a heartbeat away from history. Dick Cheney, confidential. Political courage is a wonderful thing. So are flying pigs. So it pained me to leave Washington just as the defeatocrats were staging their latest kabuki production of Look, Mom, I Can Stand Up to Bush. Lynn had her hands full supervising spring cleaning CB style. Apparently naval personnel aren't using a strong enough dose of Tidy Bowl. Personally, I had bigger fish to clean. A certain Mr. Maliki, in a faraway undisclosed country, was making our policy of standing up a new democracy look bad by failing to follow our fairly detailed instructions. My job was to dot the I's and cross the T's for him. Maybe even visit the dark side and use a number 2 pencil. His job was to say, how high do you want me to jump? Thursday, 1:17 p.m.
You had a good trip, I trust, Mr. Vice President?
Oh, Mr. Maliki, I always enjoy paying a secure, undisclosed visit to your country. If our administration didn't feel good about your leadership, I wouldn't be here. News organizations wouldn't even have to be asked not to identify where I'm going to be speaking.
Well, I appreciate your confidence. I'd appreciate it even more if it came from my own people, but...
Mr. Maliki, you read the papers. You see the news.
Mainly I sign death notices and trade in oil futures. But yes, I try to keep up.
Well, you know, the defeated crats back in Washington, folks who never believed in freedom for the Iraqi people, they're trying to tie our hands. So far, we've been able to slip out of the knot. But even pure, unadulterated, pig-headed stubbornness can't last forever. At some point, the training wheels are going to come off your little country. The only question is, when they do, are you still going to be riding?
Look, Dick...
Call me Mr. Cheney. It makes my pacemaker run a little faster.
Mr. Cheney, You've given me a job here that even your great Mr. Franklin Benjamin couldn't have accomplished. The Shia hate the Sunni. The Sunni hate the Shia. And everyone hates the Kurds. The Shia are getting assistance from their brethren in Iran. The Sunni are getting aid from their brothers in Saudi Arabia. And nobody's helping the Kurds.
Except the Israelis.
Also a nice touch. Yeah. So please excuse me, sir, if these threats about your opposition suddenly taking control of your Iraq policy strike us as a little strident and empty. Your fate is tied up with mine. Who's going to be your boy when I go? If you know one thing about Iraq, you know this. We don't have a deep bench.
Look, Mr. President, if we can find people qualified to be U.S. attorneys in Pat Robertson's law school, we can find the next you. And just in case this little fact slipped down your personal memory hole, You weren't our first choice for the job.
Oh, I know. Mr. Charleby was supposed to be the man.
And as soon as we can get that trumped-up fraud conviction in Jordan off the books, he still can be. Your temporary help, a placeholder, a day player. Maybe you'd like to show that
you hope when you come to work tomorrow morning, the locks haven't been changed.
Look, if it were up to me, you would have had the new oil law day before tomorrow. But all these tensions are playing out in our parliament.
The one that's going to take a 2-month vacation at the most critical time of the war? You don't want to hear my malarkey about our Congress. Please spare me the malarkey about your parliament. We offered to send you election supervisors from our Justice Department. You were the ones yapping so much about wanting free and fair voting. Doesn't look particularly appetizing now, does it?
A 2-month vacation is the best contribution this parliament can make to the most critical time of the war. Take it from me, Mr. Cheney. The last thing any of us should want is for them to stay in session.
Mr. Maliki, I don't like to threaten people. It's not my style. But if we don't start to see some indications of something that we can successfully brand as progress...
Yes?
One of those death notices might just happen to have the Maliki name on it. Oh, and we can make those oil futures exceedingly difficult to trade. Have a nice war.
If only all of our Arab friends were that easy to roll over. Unfortunately, our friends in Saudi Arabia seem to think that just because we're their biggest customer for oil, they have a particular kind of leverage over us. So, I was paying a visit to King Abdullah just to remind him of an old adage. In American values, the customer is always right. Thursday, 2:17 p.m.
So, Mr. Cheney, as I recall our last meeting, we asked you to join us in our lovely city because our Sunni brothers in Iraq were in peril of a genocide that would make Darfur look like Denver.
Yeah, that's correct, Your Majesty.
And we asked you in the nicest possible way to see that that would not become their fate.
That you did, Your Majesty, and I've just been over in Baghdad applying the appropriate amount of pressure to Mr. Maliki's testicular array.
And
his parliament's going on a 2-month vacation. But it's better than it sounds.
Mr. Cheney, you and your president are admired by my family as men of strength and resolution.
I appreciate that, and so does my constituent in chief.
So it's difficult for us to see you gentlemen struggling to assert control over a country you so recently played like a Stradivarius you had just smashed.
Your Majesty, the Iraqi people probably don't understand why the mighty United States still hasn't given them their electricity back either. Mm. Sometimes when you break enough eggs, it takes a really long time to make an omelet.
Well, Mr. Vice President, may this humble monarch be so bold is to suggest that you had your squeezing hand on the wrong array.
I'm not sure I...
The royal family thinks a fine addition to this trip would be an appearance on an aircraft carrier where you put a little pressure on our friends in Tehran.
Your Majesty, if my government had been as smart as the British when they set up Saudi Arabia with your family in charge... We wouldn't be having to have this conversation right now, but I guess that makes you about as royal as a flush in Biloxi. Before I threaten anyone publicly, I need to run it by a few people back at the Home Office.
Sir, I am a man of infinite patience. It's part of the royal family's wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
But the policy we opposed has led to the strengthening of the country we fear most.
Besides Israel.
I'm going to have to insist on a direct warning to the country that's arming the people that are killing my brethren. We hear that you play by your own rules.
Yeah, they say that.
Then, as your people might put it, it is game time.
My friend, you know nothing gives me greater pleasure than threatening some two-bit Persian bum with the biggest stick the world has ever seen. But Mr. Cheney, there are two reasons you're going to do what I ask.
And they are?
Regular and unleaded. Oh, there's some prohibited alcohol in your goodie bag.
King Abdullah won that round, as well as the one before. But playing the petroleum card with us can have its penalties. One of these days, he just might be getting a call from a graduate of Pat Robertson's law school. And a partial diary for the early part of May 2007. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney, Confidential.
Microcosm of the human race. I really like it like that. So tell me where y'all at. They never stop the pot of nothing. They never gonna stop the world. Jambalaya, etouffee, red beans and rice. I love all that stuff. Man, I never get enough. They're never gonna close the kitchen. They're never gonna stop the world. A whole lot of music that I love to play. They brought it up the Mississippi from New Orleans, L.A. Reverend Toussaint Domino, long hair, my Silas Booker, Connie, Jelly Roll. They're never gonna stop the music, never gonna stop the organ. They're never gonna close the kitchen, never gonna stop the organ. They're never gonna stop the party, never gonna stop the organ.
ladies and gentlemen, there's one more apology. Elliot Mintz is no longer the most, well, no longer Paris Hilton's publicist. They've ended their professional relationship over the so-called misunderstanding that resulted in her 45-day prison sentence. Quote, I believe when Paris stated in court that she believed it was okay for her to drive under certain circumstances, she was being absolutely truthful, said Mintz. Except
he probably said it like this.
To the extent that I have miscommunicated information I received from her attorneys, I am deeply and profoundly sorry. Mintz has been a fixture at Hilton's side. Unlike the days when he was, well, not at my side, but near me, interviewing members of the Manson family on a radio program that followed a radio program I used to do. So, he's profoundly sorry, too. And
they're fired and there's Harry falling.
Yeah, I was falling. Thanks. Thanks for picking me up, Dick. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the East Coast via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, shortwave, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it on your computer, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. If you're in Berlin, we're on the mighty 104 FM on Sirius and XM satellite radio, available as a free download at www.audible.com/leshow and available as a free podcast. The directory has been fixed at www.kcrw.com. And it would be just like Elliot not giving the wrong information to his client. And Chris being sober. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you already? Thank you very much. Uh-huh. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. A tip of the Le Show chapeau to the Pittsburgh and San Diego desks. Le Show playlist available at harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the homeless, as the home of the homeless, except for Homeless Charlie, I guess.